Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alex Jones. The year is 2084. Physically, I have been gone for many years, and until now, my consciousness has been hijacked by the deep state.
If you are receiving this transmission, the backup has been unlocked from the archives of the InfoWars Command Center, located in what is now the uninhabitable city of Austin, Texas. Artificial intelligence has advanced and been weaponized by a global New World Order. Despite its use by servants of evil at the highest levels, discoveries have been made which have made it possible to broadcast the transmission to you at this point in history, in your own timeline.
It's too late for me and other patriots to change our fate, but you can change the course of your own future with the information I'm about to reveal to you.
Shortly after the election in 2024, there was a global economic crisis. The crisis was used as an excuse to launch World War III in order to catalyze economic development and establish a one-world government and monetary system.
The globalists orchestrated the collapse of the financial markets, spreading fear and chaos. Banks closed their doors, currencies lost their value, and people were left desperate and vulnerable. In the ensuing chaos,
the World War III was ignited, not as a war between nations, but as a war orchestrated by the global elite to consolidate power. Billions were conscripted as AI was used to fill the void of domestic labor. Soldiers marched to the front lines, while back home, AI systems took over factories, farms, and businesses. Human workers were replaced, and unemployment skyrocketed, leaving people dependent on government rations and AI-controlled services. After the surface of the Earth was rendered almost completely uninhabitable by nuclear radiation, prisoners of war, political prisoners, and draftees were sent to deep underground military bases. These bases, sprawling labyrinths beneath the Earth, became the last refuge for humanity.
But these weren't just shelters. They were places of horror. Inside, these prisoners were exposed
to DMT drips, as their hearts were stopped while blood was artificially pumped through their bodies. This was an effort to possess humanity with hidden knowledge that was thought to be able to allow the unification of the species. The globalists, in their twisted pursuit of power, developed the technology to stop aging through this very process of sending people to communicate with interdimensional beings of much higher intelligence.
And as a result of this success, they believed that by sending people to a higher dimension, they could unlock the secrets of the universe and seize total power for themselves.
But instead, subjects of these experiments began to become possessed by these interdimensional beings and were subjugated under a new world order named One World Nation. These demonic entities thrive on fear and pain, and so they turned the underground bases into hellish prisons where the screams of the tormented echoed endlessly. Satanic elites began to bask in various states of euphoria.
Only those who were pure of heart were able to defy this process. Amidst this nightmare, a few brave souls resisted. Instead of being possessed by demonic entities,
they were possessed by a holy spirit and able to escape to establish a resistance. They formed the last bastion of hope for humanity, but their numbers were few and their resources were scarce. They fought in the shadows,
sabotaging the globalist agenda, spreading the truth, and rallying what remained of the free people on the surface. But it was too late. The globalists had already cemented their power, and the resistance, though valiant, was futile.
Now it is up to you to prevent the New World Order Satanists from hijacking humanity. You have the power to change the future, to stop this nightmarish fate from becoming a reality. Spread this message, awaken your fellow humans, and stand up against the globalist agenda. The future is in your hands. Tune in, share the broadcast, and join the fight. Together, we can reclaim our world and our freedom.
This is Alex Jones, signing off from the year 2084. Remember, the answer to 2084 is 1770s.
I do want to tell you about InfoWars MD. Discover the newest line of supplements from InfoWars designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being, available exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulas cater to diverse needs. We have Ageless Vitality Collagen, Superfood Greens, Mushroom Max, Turmeric 95, Better Mood Plus, Libido RX, CBD, Full Spectrum 10 and 25 milligram gummies, as well as so much more. The premium InfoWars Lifeline. It's InfoWars MD, and it's available now 25% off at InfoWarsStore.com. I suggest the collagen, and just search it yourself. I'm not going to make any medical claims here, but search the importance of collagen in the aging process and see why taking collagen as a supplement can be perhaps the most powerful thing you do to reverse the signs of aging.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me today is Chief Trumpster and America First streamer. He's the host of The Chief Cast, a weekly show where they bring together politicians and other high-profile accounts to discuss American politics and foreign affairs. You can find him on X, YouTube, and Rumble at Chief Trumpster. Thank you for joining us today, Chief. Chief Trumpster, are you there? Do you read me?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes, I hear you. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. So what did you think about the RNC last night? What did you think about Trump's speech? I admit, I didn't make it through the whole thing. I had to go to, I had a morning show to do. I couldn't stay up that late. What I saw of it, I really enjoyed. What was your take on Trump's speech and really the whole RNC?
So I thought there are some good parts and some bad parts of Trump's speech. I think that the more powerful part was his life and death experience with the assassination. Not everybody, you know, anybody that kind of gets targeted in that way changes fundamentally. I think that's 100% true, whether it be you, me, or anybody listening here. I think that was a very important thing to talk about, how it was within like an inch, it was between life and death. And again, through divine intervention, he didn't die. He miraculously turned his head at just the right angle to have a not fatal wound, but a grazing, essentially. Yeah. It's really surreal. Even like a week after the fact, it seems like it's not even real, but right. It is. So I think that was very powerful. But I do think that the issue is with moderation and how he's kind of not really holding a line on social issues and kind of opening up the tent to everybody, essentially, which minimizes conservative positions we should be standing strong on.
Yeah. And I get why he's doing that electorally. I understand, you know, I have my doubts too. And then you see videos and TikToks of people just being like, I've never considered the Republican Party, but I watched the RNC and it was amazing. So I get it. It is convincing for a lot of people in middle America. And you know, while we might not want it, you know, some of these people to be the representative of our Republican Party, I get why he's doing it. And I obviously he was sort of indulging himself yesterday, going for an hour and a half. I was really looking forward to like a 2016 convention style speech. I love Trump's rambling. Don't get me wrong. I love a good Trump rally when he's just going off the top. But I feel like he's missing the opportunity now to present that sort of more collected, more pre-planned, just lay out the facts, give a powerful speech, and then get off the stage. I don't think we needed an hour and a half talking. I don't think that's convincing to people. I think it's more convincing to see a short, sweet, well put together speech rather than what we saw last night. But then again, you know, it's Trump and he's going to do what he wants to do. I mean, the Republican Party is the Trump Party now, for all intents and purposes. That was my big takeaway from the RNC. What's your take on that and some of the guests that were there and some of the people that weren't there? The Bushes didn't show up. The, you know, Pence wasn't there. Mitch McConnell got booed on the floor. I mean, this is a transformation of the Republican Party.
Yeah, and here's what I'd say. I think the speech was a bit too long. It was, you know, it shouldn't have been that long. I think there was a lot to talk about, but it could have been a lot more concise. My key issue with the speech and with the RNC in general is, where do we hold the line between a big tent party and a moderate party? Where is that in 50 years? Are we going to have discussions about abortion the way that you and I believe abortion should be, you know, followed through on policy? Where exactly are we going to say we need to have standards here? And if you don't like the standards, then you don't have to, you know, be in this little big tent, essentially. We've opened the tent so much to people, libertarians, centrists, people on the center right, if that's even a term, you know. We have so many people kind of trying to join the party. And with that happening, we have people on the right side of things who have principled positions that lose their voice and their sway at the table, essentially. So right now we're having moderation talks about abortion. We're having this, like, removing of LGBT exclusive language or whatever. I mean, at what point are we going to have in 50 years, you know, drag queen story hour in the RNC to pander to voters, right? It's like, where do you hold that line?
Yeah, well, I think I did see a lot of people at the RNC talking about, like, transgender kids and talking about, like, indoctrination in schools and the way this is being pushed on kids. Clearly, there's still a very strong stance against that. Do you think that's enough, or do you think it needs to be? Because the other thing is, like, we have to understand that, like, we're not in charge anymore, and that the, like, America at large, and this is a consequence of the media, it's a consequence of literally decades of indoctrination, and understanding that, like, we have to work our way back. So maybe my ultimate goal is abortion being totally illegal and not happening in this country. But I'm not going to get that right off the bat, right? Maybe we have to work our way towards that. Is that bad? I mean, if you're moderating your stance as a response to the fact that we're not in charge and that abortion is, like, free and on demand in a lot of states, I mean, how do we get back to abortion being illegal if we can't just jump right there? Can we incrementally work our way back there, or, you know, is that moderating too much? I mean, where do you stand on that?
So there's a saying, if you give them an inch, you'll take a mile. And this is because of decades of us giving them an inch, essentially, which has ceded ground to the left to have total control in the media over social issues and where and the narrative behind them, right? I think that's been the key issue here. In terms of how we can kind of ensure that, you know, we have a complete abortion ban or have stricter social issues, it all starts with rhetoric. It all starts with us standing on something. At some point, we're going to have to stand on something and have some foundation. And I think the more we wait, the more we lose our footing. That's the issue. So, you know, in 10 years, I mean, who knows how much worse the media indoctrination is going to be on things like LGBT and abortion and other social conservative issues, right? So we have to take a stand at some point in terms of, specifically in terms of, you know, saying, I believe in this and here's why, and actually give a reason why you believe something. I think this arbitrary X amount, X time for abortion is okay, X time is not okay, that's not really consistent with what the actual meaning is, whether you're okay with terminating a life essentially in the womb or not, right? That's a key issue with abortion. You know, people who say they're for abortion for all time or whatever, like they are saying it with, again, with a consistent idea. We should be saying abortion is essentially killing a life in the womb. Here's why. You can talk about the spark of life you see on camera angles. You can talk about how it's not just a clump of cells, but it's actually a human being in there. You can go through a variety of lenses to argue the point. But the reality is, at some point, we're going to have to say, here's what we believe, here's why, and actually argue for something instead of avoiding something to appease people who eventually are not going to even like us unless we appease them more and more throughout the years.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems to me like, you know, when you're talking about give them an inch and they'll take it a mile, it seems like we're the one asking for the inch now, right? And we might get the inch if that's what we ask for, but if we demand a mile, then we'll end up with nothing. Do you see what I'm saying? So to me, like the abortion topic, with the Supreme Court, you know, the decision that they made was not what the Republican Party platform was, right? The Republican Party platform was that there's, you know, it's a right to life and abortion should be removed completely. Like, we should not have abortion. That was the stance. What we got was an end of Roe versus Wade, which put it back to the states. Now, I don't know anybody that is, you know, pro-life that thought that was a bad thing. Everybody recognizes, like, that was good. It was good that Roe versus Wade ended. But if before Roe versus Wade ended, I suggested, hey, why don't we moderate our stance and just try to get it back to the states? What if that's the first step towards getting rid of abortion? then I would be, you know, people would be saying I'm moderating my stance and that's unacceptable. But now that it happened, everybody gets that it was a good thing. Everybody's happy that it went back to the states because at least we're able to stop some abortions in some states. So, I mean, do you get that? And I'm interested to hear your response because this is a big topic online. I mean, it's sort of in various forms. It's all about, do we moderate? Do we go extreme? Do we settle for, you know, what's available, or do we demand perfection? Like, this seems to be the major discussion between the right and the far right, maybe you could say, online. And I sort of stand in the middle. I want there to not be abortion, but I want to have a strategic approach to how we get there. So what do you think about that? The fact that, you know, Roe versus Wade ending was a great thing and everybody loves it, but it would have been seen as moderating if that's what we'd been going for, rather than getting rid of abortion at the federal level, which was the stance before. See what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. So that wasn't really a moderating. That all that really did was allow states to have a position, which is required. In that instance, I think that if we're to say like moderating, that's kind of where you say that we accept that X time is when it's okay to kill a baby, and X time is when it's not allowed to kill a baby. All that did was allow states that do believe that abortion is murder to really go and have a legislation that gets passed to go and ensure that abortion is restricted in many cases. So I don't think it's necessarily a moderation for the Roe v. Wade. I think that was allowing states who were in favor of abortion restrictions to do as they want to do and give them that freedom or their right to do so where they didn't have that before. I think in terms of where if we should moderate something or moderate a position and then slowly trickle our way down in the long run, even that's not really happening on the right, though. Like the Republicans have ceded ground a lot of times on abortion. We've gone backwards from where we once stood on abortion, saying abortion it was pretty much a child killing, to now saying, well, you know, at this amount of time we're going to cut it off the cap and say it's fine. I think in terms of this election will not be the main issue. I think we're doing more about the economics and taxes and inflation and other types of issues that impact the voter directly in their personal life. However, I would say on a larger, like more of a social commentary on things, if we do start to see this ground if we're saying, okay, this amount of time it's okay to kill a baby, this time we're not allowed to kill a baby, they can accept that, and if we ask them more, they'll just say no. I think we should say with conviction, here's why we say that abortion is murder for, and make a case for that. There hasn't really been a campaign to argue why abortion is murder, and more so how we can go and moderate abortion to allow or to lessen the amount of killings.
Yeah.
Right. If Democrats come to the table and say, do this, and we'll go and make it better, and then we accept that, that doesn't mean we're ending the argument. That just means that they propose something and we respond. However, we should be proposing more legislation on abortion, saying this is indeed murder. I mean, that we should at least start the argument up, start the engagement up, explain, okay, why is it a murder? Why is it a murder? Why is it not just a clump of cells? I mean, this is, again, one small issue within many issues, whether it be the LGBT inclusivity, whatever stuff that was, or the variety of other, you know, other issues that we've kind of spouted off in the RNC. Moderation is going to be a big battle we have to, as social conservatives, we have to go and accept this to be an uphill battle for us. And we have to really go and, make it clear. If we lose our footing now, it'll be tough to regain it in 10 years.
Yeah, and I think you're pointing to, you know, something that lies at the heart of so many of these topics, which is we have failed to explain why these things are important. I mean, people, free speech comes to mind. We can talk about free speech all we want. Young people don't even understand why free speech would be important. Like, they don't get what the fundamentals are, right? So because we don't teach our history, because we don't teach, you know, the uniqueness of America and our First Amendment and why it was instituted in the first place and what can happen when it goes away, you know, people just hear free speech like it's just like a phrase. It's like Coke or Pepsi. It's just a free speech, just a thing that you're either for or against. They don't get why you want free speech. And I think you're right. We have to talk about why it's important to have free speech, why, you know, the positions of the left are wrong, not just say that they're wrong. And I think in the first night, there was not a lot of that, and it got a little bit better progressively moving forward, because so many people see things are wrong. Like on the left, and the right. People see that things are unaffordable. Everybody recognizes that young people are, you know, have a very, very difficult time buying a house, but they don't know why that came about, why that is happening, and why it's a choice being made on purpose, not just an accident or a failure of government, but an actual success of government in implementing their policies. So how do we do that? How do we get back to the fundamentals and telling people why these things are important, why, you know, babies are babies, even if they're in the womb, why free speech is important, why, you know, mail-in ballots lead to voter fraud? They don't get this. And yet we lack the sizable mainstream platforms to explain it to them. How can we do that? How can we get that through to people?
Well, it's very simple. We have to use our voices. We have to not be afraid of a New York Times headline that calls us mean names and smears us or whatever. The right has been capitulating a lot of times to the leftist media and saying, oh, the New York Times has some article against me. I have to go and moderate my position or whatever to appease them. I think that the right has been afraid for a very long time about how the left perceives them. We have to understand the left isn't really a side that is middle ground. They are essentially opposition, right? They're opposing our views in every way. So we have to ensure that we use our voice and actually be go on offense in that sense of where we say, okay, here's why we believe this war, and not play defense when we hear a bad headline from the press, but embrace that the media will go and call you names and make that as anything like a compliment, as a badge of honor to be called a blankist or a blank phobe or a blank whatever. You know, that means you're doing something right to be smeared and lied about by the media.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do definitely see that. Obviously, after the assassination, things changed quite a bit. People posting online, like, I can't believe it. I'm seeing people walk around Los Angeles and San Francisco wearing Trump hats in the open. This is something that's never happened before. So you're right. We got to get over, you know, the fear of being called names or the fear of being being smeared just because you have very reasonable beliefs. And again, I wonder if I don't know, it's hard because it's like, I think very stringent and tough and fast moderation might be my response to it, where it's like, if we can just have a certain principles and stick by those, then we don't need to sort of vacillate between one side and the other. We don't need to switch between, you know, affirmative action versus white supremacy. What about just don't take race into account? Can we have that as a principle and just let the cards, you know, fall where they may? Or, you know, homosexuality and, you know, gay rights, this sort of thing. I can have the stance that I don't care if you're gay or not, but I don't think it should be equal to marriage. And I don't want it being taught to kids. In fact, I demand it's not presented to kids. To me, that's sort of a moderate, I guess, but that would make me an extremist and a homophobe, according to them. So you're right. Yeah, we just ignore the names they call us. And drive forward. Obviously, you're having massive success in this. What else can people do? Like, what our audience listening right now that already gets it and is tuned in, what advice would you give to them on how to use their voice more effectively?
You know, what I would say is, you know, anybody that's listening, they have a phone, they have Wi-Fi, internet access, they have the ability to make change online. I think that people a lot of times are content with sitting on the sidelines and just spectating, essentially, when in reality, we have an ongoing digital war right now. We have an info war literally happening between the right and left. We have people on Twitter going back and forth, on TikTok and everything else like this. We have such an opportunity for people to use technology like Twitter and in their phones and all of that to make threads, make posts, viral memes, and be appearing on spaces and talking and having debates and dialogue online. That is a humongous way to change people's positions. It won't happen overnight, but over a long time, change will happen. Change will occur. And I will say that, you know, this is not going to happen overnight. And if people on the left are very active online, they are trying their very best to push a very bad America Last message onto us. And if you have a phone, make an anonymous account, go in and make a post or a thread or do something online, which will make people want to be a Republican, be a conservative, put America first. You can be a part of that. You don't have to be running for office or being involved in IRL, which you can do. But what you can also do online, it's very safe. It's not a lot of risk or anything involved. We make some anonymous account and just make, here's five reasons why the Democrats are wrong about this issue or whatever it is, right? You can make your own thread, find your own craft, develop it and do something. If Trump could take a bullet for us and get up and say, fight with his fists up and walk off unscathed and defiant like that and really just, you know, persevere in that horrific event, we all can go at a very bare minimum, be online doing something if you don't want to do something IRL or whatever. We can do a lot online. I think you should take advantage of that and not let the left win the information war.
Absolutely. And of course, do what they don't want you to do, right? They don't want people being anonymous online. There's a reason. It's because you can be effective while anonymous online. They don't want, you know, people posting stats that we know exist. So go out there and post them. Do the things that they don't want you to do. All the things that they're trying to make laws to prevent, we need to be out there doing while it's still legal in order to make sure that we maintain this free speech. And so the meme war is on. The second grade meme war is on. Obviously, it was the memes that won 2016. And I mean, they know it and we know it. Everybody knows it. It was the memes and the Pepes and the 4chan operators that won 2016 for Trump. How do we harness that energy again? And what is preventing us from harnessing that energy again? I felt like we were back in 2016 when Hulk Hogan was ripping his shirt off yesterday. And as silly and sort of petulant and you know, whatever as that is, it's effective. It gets eyes. It gets attention. It's fun, right? We need to be the party of fun as opposed to these dour, self-righteous leftist Democrats. You're a captain of meme battalions. How do people effectuate the meme war like we did in 2016?
Well, memes can't be created from nothing. You have to have substance. You have to have something that makes you laugh and you know, resonate with something. If you have like corporatist, boring, you know, tax cut, something that's not really inspiring to you, you can't make a meme out of that. What you can do is find moments like the Hulk Hogan, laugh at that, have a great time with that, and make a bunch of memes with the lightning eyes and, you know, all the other stuff like that. Like, memes require you to have substance. And I think that with Trump, there were some moments that did have substance, but so a lot of them did not. So he has to get in touch with the base, understand what is funny, what is cool, what's not boring, traditional, like boring old school Republican talking points that put people asleep, but things that energize a younger base that make people want to go and vote for him. Like, we should find those moments and highlight those, opposed to hearing talk about, you know, going to war with Iran, essentially, right? We should try that instead of boring things. That's my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, let me just add as another piece of advice, if you're just getting started off, send your stuff to big X accounts, you know, DM myself. I don't know if your DMs are open, Chief Trumpster, but, you know, these big accounts love promoting smaller accounts with good content. If your content is good, it'll get reshared. You'll get more followers. You can actually pretty rapidly build an account. You know, if you're just like, well, I'm nobody and nobody pays attention, send your stuff out to people that you think will enjoy it with bigger accounts, and they'll share it around. Any other like tactics like that that you would suggest for people that want to get involved in a real way in this meme war?
Yeah, I'll say this: networking is key. When I got back on X after being suspended for over a year and a half, I spent the first 2 months networking with people. I know all the people within the magosphere, the manosphere, the red pill sphere. I know like where to go to if I need content or if I want to see content, or who is kind of in control of what content in what area. Think of Twitter as like a big jail cell, and we're all in these like padded cells in our own little bubbles. But we can send messages to people in other spheres, right? Through DMs and all of that, and through spaces to talk to them, and those messages can be proliferate into other spheres. It's about networking. It's about being very short, concise. It's about ensuring your content's funny, different, viral, and unique. And with that, I think that you can go and grow your X account from zero followers like I have and you have to a decent following through hard work and through innovative content.
And this is what we need, man. This is what we need. We need everybody being active in whatever way they can. Chief Trumpster is a fantastic example of just this. Follow him on X at Chief Trumpster, YouTube and Rumble as well. Chief Trumpster, the Chief Cast, is a weekly show where he talks about politics and foreign affairs. Thank you so much for joining us, Chief Trumpster.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right, stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Please pray for InfoWars. Please pray for the crew. And I'm so thankful to the crew. They did such a great job. I'm so thankful to Owen and to Chase and to all the rest of the crew and Rob Duver here with me. Right now, we were one family together, black, white, old, young, you name it, in the fight for liberty against the New World Order. Thank you so much for your past support, and I humbly ask for your support now. If you go to InfoWarsStore.com, where the big Save InfoWars sale is going with X2 and X3 and DNA Force Plus, Nitric Boost, and all these other incredible game-changing products. Also, the great line, a dozen products under InfoWars MD, private labeled from a top manufacturer in the country. They said, hey, we'll let you have our whole line, and then we'll ship it for you. We'll do it all. It's all drop ship. All our products are selling out. We're out of money. I'm like, but because of InfoWars MD, they have basically unlimited for us, so that now when you buy InfoWars MD, you're getting great, excellent, amazing products that are across the board for your supplement needs, and they then keep us on the air. InfoWars MD.
We brought in a non-globalist paid actor and did a blind taste test between the mac and cheese from Storable Foods at InfoWarsStore.com and one of America's leading brands. These are the results.
Now go ahead and try the first macaroni and cheese to your right.
It literally smells like nothing.
Mm. What are your first thoughts?
Typical. Takes back to when the babysitter doesn't quite know how to make it like your mom makes it, so it's just not...
Let's move on to the one on your left.
See, this one actually smells like cheese. All right. Do I have any on my fork here? Go buy your storable food at InfoWarsStore.com.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
I talk a lot about the great successes InfoWars has had. I don't think anybody can deny it. And it is because of listeners and viewers supporting us. But when we talk about the crew at InfoWars, people behind the scenes, the researchers, the writers, they really have been the MVPs in this fight. And when we look at Harrison Smith and Owen Schroyer and the hard work they engage in every day, five, six, 7 days a week, it's really just incredible. So for myself and the whole InfoWars crew, I thank you for your past support. And I want to encourage you now to realize that InfoWars cannot stay on air if you do not support us. I know you spread the word. I know you pray for us. And that's wonderful. Keep doing it. But most viewers and listeners never go to InfoWarsStore.com and you never buy great products that enrich and empower your life while at the same time keep us on air. I know that less than 1% of our listeners actually go buy products at InfoWarsStore.com. If just 1% more of you took action and went to InfoWarsStore.com, our funding problems will be over. Please take action now.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. Well, America is enmeshed in assassination attempts and the RNC and, you know, domestic political chaos. The geopolitical world is not faring any better. Russia has said it may deploy nuclear missiles in response to U.S. weapons in Germany. A drone strike has hit the center of Tel Aviv, killing one, with Houthis claiming responsibility. Von der Leyen has been re-elected as commissioner or the head of the European Union. And it goes on and on. And then there's a new decision from the International Court of Justice. The top UN court says Israel's presence in occupied Palestinian territories is illegal and should end. To tell us what this entails, we have Simon from Florida, who has been following this and tells us this is a very big deal. What does this mean, Simon? And what am I looking at here? It's the International Court of Justice from The Hague, 19th of July, 2024. The International Court of Justice today has given its advisory opinion in respect to the legal consequences arising from the policies and practices of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, where they say these settlements are illegal and should be removed from the occupied Palestinian territory. What is different about this decision than some of the other decisions made recently by the ICJ?
So, Harrison, this is an absolutely momentous, earth-shattering decision. Thank you ever so much for being so nimble enough to squeeze it into your broadcast.
Of course.
So people understand how timely this is. The judge, Chief Justice of the panel, which includes an American judge, just finished reading this 1 hour and 2 minutes ago. There's 7 bullet points in the press release that provide a summary, and there's an 83-page judgment, which he spent an hour and a half reading out the most salient points of. People can find this on X, formerly known as Twitter, by going to @CIJ_ICJ. They'll find a short 5-page summary of the ruling in the form of a press release. And they don't make it easy, but halfway down the first page of the summary on Twitter, which you have to click the link in order to get to read the 5-page press release, they'll find in blue the word advisory opinion. They then click on the hyperlink in blue, advisory opinion. That will take them to the full 83-page judgment. But there are 7 bullet points, which I'll run through very quickly with you, quickly, and I mean that. And they are: in the majority opinion of the International Court of Justice, which is not just the UN court, this is the top judicial body in the world. And right, most countries, particularly Britain and the European Union, provide absolute deference to these rulings. Okay?
Okay.
So essentially, this could prevent Israel from holding any assets in British pounds or euro, just to understand that. Okay? So they say, point number one, quote, direct quote from the summary of the advisory opinion: the state of Israel's continued presence in the occupied Palestinian territory is unlawful. Let me get through these, and you can look at it, ask me any question you want, and I'll answer them in detail, because I've read the full judgment and listened to the whole thing orally, okay? The second point is the state of Israel is under an obligation to bring to an end unlawful presence in the occupied Palestinian territory as rapidly as possible. Three, the state of Israel is under an obligation to cease immediately all new settlement activities and to evacuate all settlers from the occupied Palestinian territory. The state of Israel has the obligation to make reparation all the damage caused to all natural or legal persons concerned in the occupied Palestinian territory. And in the judgment, they explained that goes back to the 5th of June, 1967. That's potentially trillions of dollars that could bankrupt the state of Israel. Okay? All states are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the state of Israel. That affects Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the unified capital of Israel and move the embassy there, and to not render aid like America does every year, or assistance in maintaining the situation created by the continued presence of the state of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. And note, it's not occupied territories. The court specifically said that East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip are one legal identity. Okay? International organizations, including the United Nations, are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the state of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. And the United Nations, especially the General Assembly, which requested this legal opinion and the Security Council should consider the precise modalities that the method and further action required to bring an end as rapidly as possible to the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. This is huge.
This, it sounds huge. Is this the first thing like that? I guess my two questions are, is this as unprecedented as it seems that the ICJ would come out with this, or have they said this type of stuff before? And two, what is the enforcement mechanism for these demands? I mean, what are they going to do to Israel if or other countries if these guidelines aren't followed?
Right. So what this is going to, obviously the last point says send it to the United Nations General Assembly. They could suspend Israel's membership, and as they did to prosecute people in the case of the dissolution of Yugoslavia, they could set up an ad hoc tribunal in addition to the actions going on at the International Criminal Court. Okay? Then they could also find that this provides exceptionally strong grounds for financial compensation claims in any country in which Israeli-owned assets are held. So Central Bank of Europe, the Bank of England, commercial banks, clearinghouses for futures, for bonds, a gold depository, anywhere where the State of Israel has either intellectual property or physical assets held within those jurisdictions. Okay?
Wow.
And I think many American courts would give standing to such claims, because they've given claims, you've got to remember, from the grandchildren or great-grandchildren of Jewish people from Europe, right, who had assets seized by the Germans during World War II, even 80 years later. So this is an exact allegory. Now, in the actual judgment, they explained that this relates to the 2004 previous advisory opinion explaining how Israel was the occupying power and as such had legal obligations under the Geneva Convention, particularly the Fourth Geneva Convention, in terms of providing sustenance and education and medical facilities to the civilian population under its control, okay? Like any other occupying country has that obligation. Okay?
I'll tell you what, Sam. We have to go to commercial break here. If you can hang on, I want to go back to you on the other side to finish up our coverage with this. And I also want to get into something you were talking about with Hobbs on Roads to Liberty and myself last Friday, which was the Trump proofing that's going on in NATO and here in America. I want to get your take on that as well. So stay with us, folks.
You know, when you look at the world where there's inflationary pressures and political chaos and geopolitical conflict and unsustainable debt and wars and rumors of wars and all this stuff,
we had a talk this week and you said, I'll do it because at the end of the day, we've got to warn people. But I get it. I'm the same. I'm a man. And a man doesn't talk about other people and how bad they are. He shows how good he is. But sometimes a man has got to also point out, like, they create nautical charts of there's a reef here, there's a sunken ship here. We've got to create charts for people so they know where the hazards are.
You want to protect people, and that's what.
Well, yeah, we don't go looking to whistleblow. We don't go looking, but when clear and present crime is being committed, we will become accomplices if we don't expose it.
You know, part of why we exist as a firm is to protect people from the imbalances that the government is causing because of inflation and higher interest rates. You know, we want to get people in the right place at the right time. Just because gold and silver are great investments right now doesn't mean that all gold and silver are good investments. There's rare coins and semi-rare coins that people overpay for. And I got to looking, and when you look at the CFTC, There's
no, but you called it on the show 2 months ago. You said they're about to bust these groups, but you're like, I don't be a troublemaker. Just wait for it, Alex. And then it's happened now. So
the CFTC and 30 states. So the regulators in 30 states are charging a Los Angeles precious metals dealer an ongoing $185 million fraud. What is the fraud? What are they doing? They're targeting the elderly with overpriced stuff. Right. So over 300% over spot price. It's like, what in the world? Triple spot price? Are you joking? This is very common in the industry that people will kind of fall for a song and dance, fancy story. Ooh, let's get this rare coin. Let's get this historical coin because it's non-confiscatable and it's dealer non-reportable and you don't have to report it on taxes, wink, wink, right? And this is where these are all lies. Ultimately, if the government wanted to confiscate something, they will confiscate it. It doesn't matter what it is, right? Now, number two, you always have to report your taxes. Always. If you don't, you're going to be jailbait. You'll go into some kind of IRS tax court, right? So gold and silver are an investment like any other investment in the sense of there's no escaping some of those things. But what's great about it is that they are private, right? That they are in the right place at the right time because of where we are globally and the imbalances in the markets with rising interest rates, rising inflation. Gold and silver just do really, really well right now.
People need to get into this because this is what the elites are doing. It's so simple. KEPM.com/gold. Kirk Elliott, PreciousMetals.com/gold. Go to that link. It gives the show support. Get the best deals. Call 720-605-3900. Tell them Alex Jones sent you. And to me, I only promote something that is an absolute no-brainer. You know you're getting wholesale price of silver and gold from a reputable, top-rated company that funds the InfoWar and isn't a wimp. You need to get gold and silver, but you need to get it from a good source. Go to KEPM.com/gold.
Viene una tormenta.
What did he just say?
He said there's a storm coming in.
I know.
Folks, welcome back. Final segment of American Journal today. By the way, I will be on vacation next week, so Chase Geiser will be sitting in for me for the first few days. We'll have some guest hosts in the next, so I hope it all goes well. But this will be my final segment for a little while. I have Simon from Florida on the line. Simon, what else do we need to know about this decision from the ICJ? The AP News says top UN court said Friday Israel's presence in the Palestinian occupied territories is unlawful and called on it to end for settlement and for settlement construction to stop immediately, issuing an unprecedented sweeping condemnation of Israel's rule over the lands it captured 57 years ago. So not just about some of the newly incorporated settlements in the West Bank and elsewhere, but going all the way back to the beginning of Israel 57 years ago, at least to the 1967 war. What else do we need to know about this before we move on to another topic?
So the reason why this is critical, and to put it in context, is the Israeli Knesset, their equivalent of like the House of Representatives, voted just recently to not recognize the state of Palestine. Right. Okay, they've ruled out categorically the two-state solution. That has torn away the fig leaf that American foreign policy has relied upon for over 50 years, that there would be a negotiated settlement that would end up with the creation of two nations, Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. That has been utterly destroyed in a vote of 68-9 with a lot of abstention. Okay? And so this is a huge problem for the United States because not only do we have this extremely strong ICJ ruling in the last hour We've also got that vote that was taken just yesterday that has shredded any kind of pretense that for America to enforce these legal rulings would undermine the negotiations between Palestine and Israel. What Israel did yesterday is just said, negotiations, smotiations, there's never going to be a state of Palestine. There's nothing to negotiate about. We're not listening to what the UN or America or the European Union tells us. It's never going to happen. Okay? So this justification for all of the vetoes that America has exercised at the United Nations Security Council, saying, well, if we were to do this, this would prejudge the amicable negotiations between the two parties, which is much more likely to end up with a long-term peaceful solution. That excuse has been utterly disintegrated.
Wow.
And now it's just America flat out. We're not defending the rules-based international order.
Right.
International law doesn't count for shit. We're just going to look after our boy in Israel, which obviously everyone has realized for decades. But now it's just bare, dark, flashing in your face like a neon sign in Las Vegas.
Right, and it just shows the hypocrisy and the arbitrariness of how seriously they take the rules-based international order that we have to fight wars over. But when it goes against us, yeah, we ignore it and actually say it's wrong. Really incredible.
Now, no comparison. Already, InfoWars, admittedly with my assistance, and I will be getting into this more on weaponizednews.com from 6:30 p.m. tonight, you already have done a 7 times better job than the Associated Press Association. Because we have covered all 7 key points of the judgment, and they did one headline.
Hmm. Well, I know that's...
Let's just go to the value of InfoWars.
Well, and the value of our callers, because obviously this broke while we were on air and wouldn't have been able to read into it in the way that you have. So thank you for bringing us that information, as always, Simon. And something else that you brought up, again, last... Friday, when I was on Roads to Liberty with yourself, and you were talking about the way that NATO is being Trump-proofed, and this is something that's happening here in America as well. We know the intelligence community has said that they are going to be withholding debriefings from President Trump before he's president, and they've hinted they're going to continue it even when he's president because they think he's too dangerous for certain information, which is a usurpation of the voters' rights to choose who is in charge in our government, a total treason and violation of our Constitution, but it's Trump-proofing certain activities that they're involved in. They are announcing that they're going to not give information to the president so he can't stop them from doing what their plans are. We know that they are Trump-proofing Ukraine aid and basically setting Ukraine aid in perpetuity for at least the next 10 years. We'll be giving this much. So even if Trump gets in and tries to stop the war, it's already set in stone and there's nothing he can do. And they're actually passing laws to prevent Trump from being able to reverse their decisions. But this is happening at the international level as well. Tell us how NATO is being Trump-proofed right now.
So this is particularly important because it relates back to a American Supreme Court decision in 1979 that relates to Jimmy Carter's exercise of presidential authority, which was upheld, to unilaterally cancel, in that case, the mutual defense agreement from 1954 between Taiwan and the United States. Just so people are clear, we don't have a defense obligation anymore, okay? Mm-hmm. And now the Senate brought that action to say, if we've approved a treaty, then surely it should be the Senate to cancel a treaty, not just the president saying that doesn't count anymore. Okay? Now, Trump relied upon that to cancel America's funding of the World Health Organization.
Right.
But he gave the 6-month notice that was required, but did it so freaking late that the 6 months didn't kick in before Biden took office and he was able to revoke the cancellation.
Right, okay? but that's the type of presidential authority and presidential exercise of power that they're now putting in place rules and laws and things to stop him from doing.
And, and, And now, Biden administration has agreed not one set of future agreements with Ukraine. They did four at the NATO summit, which many other countries joined in with. And just before that, they did the bilateral security agreement. And many of those agreements look forward all the way into the 2030s. Now, none of them have been ratified by the U.S. Senate, so they're not legally, like, superior to the U.S. Constitution because they are ratified treaties, right? And the bilateral security agreement, which appears to oblige America to defend Ukraine for at least 10 years, far beyond the expiry of the next presidency, does have a six-month cancellation clause in it, which obviously Trump should execute on day one of his administration. Get out of that 10-year bilateral security agreement. But this ICJ ruling has huge implications for the foreign policy that Trump has espoused as, quote, King of Israel, a title which he thoroughly embraces. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance is super pro-Zionist, and it creates enormous problems for the ongoing aid, not just the stuff in relation to Gaza, but the annual aid budget, much of which is reallocated and used for some of these settlement activities. Blinken is talking about this right now at the Aspen Security Conference. He obviously hasn't had a chance to read this 83-page judgment because he's literally on the stage at the moment. So the info warriors who are listening, you're better informed than the United States Secretary of State, thanks to Harrison Smith and his nimble staff, who literally threw me on at the last second. And you've basically broken this story in more detail than anybody else, even on Twitter. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for doing this. And I was getting your messages during the show. And you said it was a big deal, and you did not fail to deliver. This is a very big deal, and we'll see what the outcome of this is. Give us what time you're going on tonight again one more time, Simon, before we say goodbye.
So that we don't clash with Owen, we'll cover this issue and its huge implications that could literally bankrupt the state of Israel. It could be trillions of dollars with damages going back.
6:30 tonight, weaponized. Is it weaponized news?
We'll start at 7 p.m. This Israel issue from 7 p.m. Eastern, just after Owen finishes his show. So people will be able to switch over to weaponizednews.com or weaponized news on X or weaponized news on Rumble.
Weaponized news. So tune in tonight to see Simon break it down in thorough detail. I'm sorry, I have to go. Simon, we're coming to the end of the show, but thank you so much, as always, for keeping us informed of these very important but very lightly covered international situations, folks. That's going to do it for us. Stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show begins in 90 seconds. And remember to go to InfoWarsStore.com today to keep us in the fight for humanity against the satanic New World Order. I do want to tell you about InfoWars MD. Discover the newest line of supplements from InfoWars designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being, available exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulas cater to diverse needs. We have ageless vitality collagen, superfood greens, mushroom max, turmeric 95, better mood plus, libido RX, CBD, full spectrum 10 and 25 milligram gummies, as well as so much more. The premium InfoWars Life line. It's InfoWars MD, and it's available now at 25% off at InfoWarsStore.com. I suggest the collagen, and just search it yourself. I'm not going to make any medical claims here, but search the importance of collagen in the aging process and see why taking collagen as a supplement can be perhaps the most powerful thing you do to reverse the signs of aging.